You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
How are you doing on this new year?
Well, I'm not nearly as hungover as I feared I might be, so that's the good part. I am.
It's a big positive.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
There's probably only a few people, even in this blustery state of Wisconsin that I live in, that follow the Brewers any closer than me.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Tried to delve into the Korean stats, which of course can be a fool's game of sorts. But the odd thing about judging Korean players that come over is...
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
This is Chuck Anderson representing Friends with Fantasy Benefits. We are ringing in the new year. 2017 is here. I'm fortunate. One of my new compadres for our upcoming year. We're going to do a Tuesday podcast every week. Ben Brennis is with us. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How are you doing on this new year?
Well, I'm not nearly as hungover as I feared I might be, so that's the good part. I am.
It's a big positive.
It is. I am a little exhausted, but fortunately for me, this is a subject that we're going to tackle today that is near and dear to me. In a different existence, I believe I am actually a Brewers blogger, meaning there's probably only a few people, even in this blustery state of Wisconsin that I live in, that follow the Brewers any closer than me. So it's going to be excellent because Ben from the New Jersey area, our listeners will get a take from someone seeing the Brewers from the outside versus someone who is living their existence and seeing all their pregame shows and seeing all of their games like myself. I think it will be a very good, well-rounded look at the Milwaukee Brewers and their impact on fantasy. Do you plan on owning a number of Brewers in this upcoming season, or do you think it's a team you're going to mostly pass on?
It's not a team that I'm looking to totally pass on. I actually own a couple of them in a couple of dynasty leagues, so I guess we'll just have to see what happens. I would like to be able to acquire some more of the young talent that they have, but I know that we're going to talk about that when we actually get onto the show. So why don't we just jump right on in?
Well, we can do that, but Ben, both for my own knowledge, et cetera, why don't you give us your Twitter handle, et cetera, and how you can be reached? Because
sure. I'm at bbrennisfwfb, and you can reach me on social media, at Twitter, basically. Any questions that you have for baseball, basketball, or football, you can always just ask me there.
Well, I know I'm getting back into basketball this year because of the three sport league and that I'm in. And so Ben has been very good to me about that too. So you seem like you're more well rounded than me. Baseball is definitely my thing first and foremost. Although, football and basketball seem to be catching up a little bit. I think it's a rub-off effect from all the guys that I get to. So it's wonderful to be able to talk to smart people about these different subjects going on. So I think it's working well.
It's likewise for me as well. So it's always good to be able to find like-minded individuals.
Yeah, well, that is fun. Now, if people want to reach me at Twitter, I can be reached at Just Chucking It. I don't know why I haven't added any FWFB on my stuff because I'm definitely living a Friends with Fantasy Benefits existence now, and I'm happy to be doing so. But you're more than welcome to reach me there. I get a lot of baseball feedback, which I really enjoy. Well, when we tackle the Milwaukee Brewers coming into the year, First of all, it's kind of a unique team because they're Mr. Stearns, their young GM. We never know exactly what they're going to do. I like to say that whenever people are certain that he's going to zig, that's when he zags. and this offseason was one of those. And the first guy we're going to talk about is a guy that everyone assumed was going to be an L.A. Dodger by now. And that's the polarizing personality of one Ryan Braun. And the way I posed it to you, Ben, in our notes is I wonder if what you think Ryan Braun's value, how it's affected by all the trade talk, and if it, you know, if it changes how you look at him going into this next year.
Personally, for me, it doesn't really affect it. He's been just basically subject for trade rumors for what feels like forever. And it really hasn't bogged him down. The thing that's basically stopped him is injuries. It doesn't seem like the trade speculation bothered him. It doesn't seem like any of the PED and debacle from a couple years ago bothered him either. So it doesn't seem like that social media aspect or the talk basically about him really affects him. It's just, you know, which is good for a fantasy owner. Basically, it means that all you're really worrying about is how he's playing when he's healthy. And for the most part, he was relatively healthy last year, and you can't ask for anything more than that from Ryan Braun.
Yeah, I think that's very true. You know, I've lived this Ryan Braun, you know, spectacle, if you will. My wife is a huge Ryan Braun fan, so we were a little crushed as Brewer fans when everything went down with Ryan. But the thing that I will say about Ryan Braun that I think is often overlooked, even amongst diehard Brewer fans, is that he's truly a special talent. You know, his ability to go the other way. Any given day, Ryan Braun could go off for 2 or 3 home runs, 6 to 9 RBIs. He's just that kind of a player. And there's very few talents like that. I equate him in my mind mentally to Joey Votto, because I think people have a tendency to forget with Votto, you know, stuck in Cincinnati, with Braun stuck on, you know, lackluster Brewer teams here over the last couple of years, that he's just a very, very unique MVP caliber type talent. And those guys are not easy to come by. So when people have talked, you know, extensively around here about Ryan Braun being traded, I think to myself that they're underestimating what a hole in the lineup would actually be left when Ryan Braun got traded. You agree with that?
I would, especially just because if you look at all the value that he brings, it's like, how many outfielders are there that can hit 30 home runs and hit and basically steal 10 plus bags while still hitting 300? You know, those are such tough qualities to be able to find even two of them in a certain player, to let alone find all three. It's just, it makes him such like a top tier talent that it's like you said, he has those MVP like caliber moments. And he obviously had those moments years ago more so than now, but it's not like the injuries have like sapped him of his power or speed or anything. And it's just like, it's so impressive to watch him play.
Yeah, it really has been a delight. You know, I'm pretty sure the day that they do trade Ryan Braun, my wife will probably tear up. You know, and there's been a lot of special moments over the years as a Brewer fan with Ryan Braun, and I don't forget that. And to me, it's not completely tarnished by the PED thing, even though there was a lot. Obviously, there was quite a bit of disappointment around that as well. So I think Ryan Braun still is, is a value. And I don't think there's an outfield drop off, you know, shortly after Ryan Braun. And I do not think it would not bother me at all if Ryan Braun ended up on a couple of my teams this year. I think an overview for me is people that used to be first round picks, to me, have first round talent. People that listen to the podcast know I'm high on Carlos Gomez because I think he's falling too far. People who, you know, have that talent, it's there. Do you agree that Ryan Braun is somebody that, you know, if you miss out on the top tier of outfielders, you're filling your infield, that he can be an anchor in your outfield this coming year?
Oh, he for sure is one of my anchors. If I'm able to get him, I would be extremely happy about that, just because it's like we've just been able to talk about the stats that he's able to provide, especially when he's healthy. It's phenomenal. Like, the worst part about his stats is basically going to be his runs scored, and that's just because there's just not a lot of people behind him, which unfortunately works against him, but it seems like now they may have added another piece and Thames that would be able to actually be able to get him some potential more runs scored, which could boost his value. I mean, for me personally, I have him ranked as my eighth overall outfielder. So clearly, I'm in love with the guy.
Yeah, and I like I said, I can't blame you. Well, I mean, he is kind of the value, the known value. I like to consider him he's the new Carlos Gonzalez, meaning that a couple years ago, the question with Cargo wasn't how good he was going to be, but how much he was going to play. And that's how I feel about Braun to a large extent. If you know that you're going to get 130-plus games, you know, where he's mostly healthy for those 130-plus games, then I think your ranking might even be too low, which is high praise because there's a number of decent outfielders at the top of the outfielder list. But like I said, there's a drop-off there, and I think we did a good job of covering Ryan Braun, who's a very unique talent.
Exactly.
Now a more perplexing question comes about. Jonathan Villar and Hernan Perez both had power and speed last year, and now we have to try and decide how we're going to gauge them going forward. Do you think the power is real for these two guys, and are they two guys that are on your radar? Do you think you're higher than most on them, or do you think they're a little overrated going into this coming year?
I don't think that VR is overrated at all. I think that he's going to be a good value. I don't know if he's going to have as many stolen bases as he did last year. He basically had as many stolen bases as he had RBIs. But I do believe that he's going to be able to provide a good amount of value to be worth like a top shortstop / middle infielder / third baseman. Basically, he provides so much value because he has multi-positional eligibility that it allows you to be able to get a ton of value and speed, which is almost non-existent at times in fantasy baseball. So it's helpful to have someone who isn't like a total batting average killer like Billy Hamilton at times. So have someone who hits .285 and can steal 60-plus bases is pretty good.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, the overview of the Brewers is that all the Brewers ran last year. Like all of them, which has been Craig Counsell's, you know, it's been his MO that he wanted to get a team that had good speed. You know, it's part of the reason that they jettisoned Chris Davis with a K. So, you know, he's gotten that speed versatility in the lineup, and that's really a good thing. The thing about Jonathan Villar to me is I don't really recall someone having regular power that looks the way his power does. It's like almost like a slasher style power. Mm-hmm. Like Jose Reyes used to be.
That's exactly who I was thinking.
Oh, it is. That's good to know. You know, I was trying to think of more traditional slash power kind of guy. Not slash as in the symbol, but like he's a slasher at the plate, which makes good sense in a way because he uses his speed that way with the way that he hits. But it's
Brett Gardner kind of is like that a little bit. He more is like a almost like not a slap hitter, but the way he just comes through the plate, basically just it's not a true power swing, and that's basically what you get with VR.
Yeah, I mean, and he's in the right, you know, they're in the right home stadium, you know, and they get to play a lot of games in Cincinnati, which is a really nice place to hit for power too. So there's something to be said for that. The curious thing about VR, of course, is I don't think I'm going to end up owning him in a lot of leagues this year. And by and large, I think that's because I'm a little frightened by someone who came so out of nowhere. And now all of a sudden I see him going as, you know, a top 20 to 25 overall pick. Seems like a lot to me. And he's also, a few years ago, shortstop was so different than it is now. And obviously, you know, he offers more eligibility than just that now. But just the fact that the middle infield is not what it used to be, you know, you know, guys, other, there's other guys that I like more. I like Trevor Story more, which puts me in a minority. And there's a few of the shortstop guys that I like more than VR. So my complaints about VR aren't really VR himself. It's just kind of, there's a huge difference between Jonathan VR and Hernan Perez in their draft position and where they're going. And, you know, now we talk about Hernan Perez now, we'll know, you know, what the concerns, major concerns are. Hernan Perez is a guy they got a couple years back from the Tigers organization. He was always a shortstop in the Tigers org, and now, you know, he's transferred that to being a third baseman, second baseman, first baseman, outfielder, because the Brewers are so deep at short. If they were in a jam, Hernan Perez can play shortstop, which, you know, I wouldn't count on that eligibility, but in something like a draft and hold, you never know what could happen, because I do think that they will protect the service time for a lot of their minor leaguers as best as they can. But I was all over Hernan Perez last year, and so the Friday pod or Thursday pod, we recorded on Wednesdays. You know, those guys sort of laughed at me, Eli and Justin, about being, you know, Mr. Hernan Perez. But last year turned out to be a really rewarding year to own Hernan Perez because he had such a nice combination of power and speed. But he had no power when he was in the minors. So how do you how do we project a guy like Hernan Perez going forward? What do you think, Ben?
Well, for me, I personally felt like, not to say and jump on the bandwagon, but I kind of felt like the balls were juiced a little bit last year. I felt like MLB wanted a little bit more offense, and they kind of got that. So I'm not sure if he's going to hit 13 home runs again. He seems like a, maybe like a 6 to 10 type hitter. Maybe if he gets, you know, 13 again, then you're going to count yourself lucky. But basically you're getting him because he provides all-around multi-category stats for you, which is – and he's multi-positional eligible, which those two things, especially with a later round pick, is something that you as a fantasy owner are going to want to try to acquire for the fact that you can plug him in anywhere. You know that if say, they lose RC or VR for any reason, he can fill in at those positions. He can fill in the outfield. He has the ability to steal bases. He stole 30-plus last year, so...
Yeah, and you know the interesting thing from our end, watching them every day, is that the Brewers basically announced last year that their goal for Hernan Perez was to be an all over the diamond utility guy. You know, they made that clear, and that's basically how the season turned out. He had to play large chunks of the season, you know, at third base, because they didn't always have someone there. But the interesting thing that's holding back his draft value now is people start doing the math on where he's going to play, because the Brewers moved VR to third last year to let Arcia develop at the major league level, which, you know, had a bit of a hurdle in it, because Arcia's numbers are much better minor league-wise as far as plate discipline was than it was last year at the big league level. But the point being is that if VR plays third, Hernan Perez pretty much looks like he should play second, but they have not shown any signs of giving up on Scooter Gennett. So it's one of these works in progress. Hernan Perez definitely can play left, can play right, can play first, can play second, can play third, can sub it short. So it's one of those things where people are going to be scared away that they don't think there's going to be enough playing time. But somehow or another, just in the course of the season and what have you, I think Hernan Perez is going to get enough bats to be significantly relevant. Do you agree?
I do. I do think that he's going to be able to get enough at bats. He's type of like – he's similar to like a Javi Baez in terms of his utility feel, in which – you feel like the manager council is going to try to get him into the lineup whenever he can. If he's got to give someone a day off, he will. I mean, personally, I think for them, their best shot is to put him basically in the outfield for most days of the week, and then just kind of let him, you know, jump around between the infield positions for people's days off. That seems like the most likely solution to him, and they play Shaw at third and they play VR at second and Thames at first. That seems like the most likely outcome of what will happen, but I guess we'll have to see basically on how Thames ends up handling major league pitching And that may end up making Council have a little more flexibility if he doesn't.
Of course, the hope long-term for Dynasty League owners would be that Hernan Perez would also get second base eligibility, which Scooter Gennett showed some signs last year of hitting decent against left-handed pitching. But you would think the traditional handbook, the manager's handbook, which I've never actually seen. You've probably never seen a copy of it either. But the traditional manager's handbook says that, you know, especially against decent lefties, that Scooter Gennett should sit. So that will allow to give him somewhat of a base for playing time alone. And, of course, Ryan Braun with the cryogenic thumb injections and all the stuff that's happened in recent years, you'd think that, you know, that will add to his availability to have extra playing time as well. So we can look for that to happen. I personally like the draft value better of Hernan Perez than Jonathan Villar, just because, like, in our mock draft that we're doing now, you know, Hernan Perez, well, lasted a long time. To get somebody in, you know, the teen rounds versus somebody in round two or round three, I like Perez's value better. Which value do you like better, my friend?
I also like Perez's value. I'm personally a big VR fan. I saw a lot of talent when he was in Houston, and then I saw a lot of talent when he came over in 2015 and played a little bit in his 100 or so at-bats that he got. I do know that he is a player that is able to duplicate this type of value, maybe not to 19 home runs, because like I said, I felt the balls were juiced, but I don't think he's going to be able to replicate the value that Hernan Perez is going to give you for where you draft each player. So Perez seems like the better fit in draft day value for me.
Well, you know, we're going to transition now into something that's going to be a little bit more nebulous because it's a very cloudy situation, but we're going to talk about starting pitcher value on the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, and I really, one of the most curious questions to me is, you know, is there a pitcher on this staff that you say to yourself, boy, he could really be an outstanding draft value for what the perception is towards him? For those of you who don't know, which, you know, you're really sick human beings out there if you have, you know, no regional reason to know every Brewer pitcher. But it certainly looks like it's going to be a combination of Junior Guerra, Zach Davies. We're going to get some more Matt Garza, which is, you know, which is very unfortunate. But we also have an underperforming Jimmy Nelson, who I like to say looks like Mr. Yuck when he's out on the mound. Just looks very unhappy while he's out there. And then we're going to get a combination of a lot of ugly attempts to generate, you know, Taylor Youngman,
Anderson, yeah, and Willie Peralta probably, right?
Yeah, and you know, Willie Peralta is I think is an interesting character in this discussion. But from the outside, Ben, what are your feelings about potential values here on the Brewer pitching staff?
I mean, I guess the player who I feel is going to basically give you the best value is Zach Davies. Junior Guerra had a good season last year. I don't know that he's able to duplicate that. And that's the problem. It makes it tough to want to pick him when he doesn't really give you any value, potentially, because it was kind of an up and coming season for him in that aspect.
Yeah. Well, you know, Junior Guerra is an interesting person around here. He was the very first acquisition that Stearns made as the Brewer GM. You know, he got Junior Guerra in a song. Junior Guerra is a guy who's, you know, played overseas. He's played in the Independent League. But when he was at his best last year for a key stretch, which was really, you know, like a 15-game stretch, he was pretty dominant on the mound. He's got an out pitch. His arsenal definitely has a huge off-speed pitch, which keeps the ball down. And he's somebody that I actually like quite a bit. My issues with Davies, you know, he's somebody we got Davies for you know, a month and a half rental of Gerardo Parra, which looks genius right now, just because we're getting decent starts out of Davies in and of itself. But these soft tossing lefties that have to hit their spots are better real world pitchers to me than they are fantasy pitchers. So I am not as high on Davies' value. even though all these guys are going really, really late. I mean, we have not sniffed yet a Brewer pitcher in the mock draft, and you know we're in the almost to the 20th round. So there's you're definitely in the mining stage, the pick your flavor stage, and hope that the unpredictability of pitching falls your way. So I think Zach Davies is, from the outside, I definitely see it. From the inside, you know, it's hard not to. He looks like he just got his driver's license. He's a little guy out on the mound. He's a fighter. He does all the things the right way. I just don't know that he's going to amass enough strikeouts to be one of those end game plays with huge upside. You know, I like to take gambles on guys that can really, really jump up to being a top three or four round type of pitcher at some point. I don't know that Davies' arsenal will allow him to do that with it when he tops out only in the low 90s. So, I don't know. There's no right answer, and I don't think there's any wrong answer either. You know, Jimmy Nelson, just to touch a little bit, Jimmy Nelson really came into prominence as a Brewer prospect by having a sub 2 ERA in Colorado Springs, which is unheard of. Rich Wilson, who's a longtime friend of my podcasts and prospect guy on Prospect 361, he was always stunned and always pointed to that fact that Miller holds a lot of potential because of his ability to do that, which was unthinkable to him. But it really has not developed. After a handful of starts last year, you know, the middle and the end of the season was definitely as bad as anyone could imagine for Miller. So, you know, he's a really, really – for Nelson, I'm sorry. And Jimmy Nelson, Jimmy Miller. They're both common names. That's all I can say, I guess, on my behalf. But Jimmy Nelson is a guy that I think is going to be really is somebody to watch on waiver wires because there was a tremendous amount of potential pointed to as a minor league player and in his first couple years. And the same thing could be said for Peralta. We thought the mainstays of our rotation were going to be Peralta and Nelson, as little as a year and a half ago. And now we're wondering if they can both maintain rotation spots. And that's the unpredictability of pitching, isn't it? So you,
it is.
There's
a couple of the minor leaguers.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've owned Jimmy Nelson a couple of times. I like his potential. Just he walks a lot of people right now, and his control hasn't been as pinpointed as it had been a couple of years ago. So I'm kind of losing a little bit of interest in him, but I like him as a dark horse candidate to be able to lead this team. I mean, all the pitchers I like are all in the minors, basically. That's the thing. I like your minor league rotation more than your major league rotation. So,
yeah, and it's gonna be interesting because, you know, Phil Bickford ran into some trouble as a minor league pitcher. You know, he's under suspension now, and you know they got him for their lefty reliever that they sent to San Francisco last year at the trade deadline. But I wonder exactly how close some of these guys are. An interesting minor league name is Jorge Lopez. Ripped up the winter leagues this year. He was a winter league MVP with a strikeout per inning and really dominating stuff. But his minor league numbers don't look great. And I hear a lot of wavering reports on Josh Hader as well. That's Hader. Josh Hader is a guy that most prospect analysts seem to think is going to turn into a reliever because he just doesn't have the third pitch arsenal or control numbers that you like to see out of a starting pitcher. So there's a lot of moving pieces. They got a kid named Ortiz in the Lucroy deal. He's somebody that people are going to be watching closely as well to see exactly how he develops because he was a top five type of prospect from within the Rangers organization when they got him. So there's stuff to watch there, even though you're obviously not going to anchor your staff with any Brewer starters. that's a very odd play if you decide to do it that way. Let's put it that way. What else with your dynasty background? Are there other Brewer farmhands that you really that you have your eye on? And do you think we're looking at short term, like this year into early next year, or do you think we should be looking out further than that from the mainstays in the Brewers minor system?
I mean, Cody Ponce is still a pitcher that I think could have some decent value within the next few years. I don't think he's going to be up this year. I think that they'll get him another year of seasoning. He could maybe come up in September, but I don't really think so. Marcos Diplin's another pitcher who could, you know, eke out some value if he does come up, just because of how weak that rotation is. Mostly all the people that that we haven't touched on are the hitters. There's a lot of hitters that actually like in this farm system. You know, I personally still am an Andrew Susick fan. I liked Brett Phillips coming into last year, but he didn't really produce at the level that I had expected. But I still think he has the talent to be able to turn it around. You know, Liriano had some talent until he took the ball in the face last year, so, and he ended up missing the entire season. Ciccini could have some value. You know, you have other hitters. You got Lewis Brinson. I mean, that was one of the major hauls that you got when you traded Luke Roy. And to get Brinson, who's basically a five-tool player, and he's so young with so much talent, it's just, that's a player that could end up, you know, overtaking Keon Broxton at some point this year and being able to just be a stud like that. You guys got a lot of players to look forward to in that system.
Well, on top of the fact that you know, I live within a couple hours of Milwaukee, I also live right by Appleton, which is the home of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, which is their single A club. So I saw Ison Diaz and I saw Mr. Ursig, which is their, you know, the next wave. I think the depth of their system is something that has really helped, you know, them rise through the BA ranks, if you will, or the minor league system ranks that you see on MLB.com. So there is going to be a lot to watch for. Brinson, I do think, is the first guy who comes up. I think he even gets a shot before Phillips, especially since Phillips took that step back last year. So if anybody helps us next year, the first person that I think of is Brinson, who is an interesting guy whose numbers have been a little all over the board. Some people said he took a plate discipline step backwards last year. But he seems to have all the talent, size, skill, a pure center fielder, which, you know, pretending to put a corner outfielder in center and a pure center fielder has a lot more real life value with the real center fielders. So I think there's a lot to watch for with Lewis Brinson. On top of these questions that we've tackled, Ben very astutely said that we need to talk about and form an opinion and give our listeners an opinion on what to expect from one Eric Thames coming over from the NC Dinos of the KBO. It always KBO always makes me think of a boxing term for some reason or another. So why don't you lead us into an Eric Thames discussion? What are your first instincts about Eric Thames coming up this year?
Well, one of my first things that I wanted to do when I had heard that he had signed was basically I went to talk to one of our baseball gurus, Matt Thompson. And just because Matt's so good with prospects, I hadn't really known much about him. So I kind of figured Matt would know most about him more than anyone else I was going to be able to ask. And he basically stated that the guy's got a lot of power and he's not a liability at the plate. But the most underrated part of his game is that he could end up getting like 10 to 20 steals for you basically from the first base position. There's not a lot of first basemen that actually do that in this league. Outside of Goldschmidt, you don't really have a lot of players at first that you can consistently count on. Like, you may get some from Rizzo occasionally, you know, but outside of that, there's not a lot of players that you can really rely on power and speed. And there is the potential if those players on base and VR and Perez and some of the other players like Arcia, that there could be people on base for you to get a lot of RBIs. So I think he's going to be able to provide good value. I wouldn't break the bank on him, but to me, he's a top 20 first baseman and he hasn't even played in the MLB in the last couple of years. So, like, you know, we got a lot of upside with this guy.
You know, interesting. I tried to delve into the Korean stats, which of course can be a fool's game of sorts. because of the smaller parks that they have there and because of inflated offensive numbers we've seen. But the odd thing about judging Korean players that come over is I think it's an individual basis. People want to group these guys together. They want to say, okay, well, we've got Byung-ho Park who came over. So they want to look and they say, okay, well, Byung-ho Park, he was a first baseman. And now Eric Thames comes over and he's a first baseman who the Brewers announced can play both corner and outfield spots, by the way, which I think was an important factor in them jettisoning Chris Carter for Eric Thames. But when I looked into his stats, I mean, they are eye-popping and you don't want to overvalue them. But at the same time, it's hard not to look at them and see 87 home runs and 53 stolen bases in the last 2 years. Last year was his worst plate discipline year in the KBO, which was 103 strikeouts to 74 bases on balls, which is certainly not bad. He had years where he had more walks than he had strikeouts. You know, it's an odd thing. He never stole more than 8 bases at any stop in the minors. In, you know, MILB, if you will, or in the majors. But then all of a sudden he had 40 2 years ago in the KBO. Now, that was followed up by only 13 last year. And he's got a fairly significant caught stealing rate as well. So if he was on a different team that wasn't the Brewers, I wouldn't necessarily be looking to him for stolen bases. But, you know, like Ben pointed out, Brewers have a tendency to fall in to, you know, 8 or 10 stolen bases on accident just because they're so trigger happy on the bases. So I do think that Eric Thames is a guy, if you're in trouble with speed, and the one thing the mock has shown me is there's pockets of speed in the draft. You know, if you get a guy who doesn't run in the first round and in the second round, you will be chasing speed throughout your draft, unless you're one of those people who's okay taking a Billy Hamilton that you're only going to get that one category out of. So Eric Thames is an interesting late game play, like Ben pointed to. I don't think that you can make across the board statements about these guys that come over from Cuba or Korea or, you know, any of the different leagues that we're seeing players come over now. I think each one is their own individual and people are going to react differently to the velocity that they see in Major League Baseball. I think that's the biggest factor. Do you agree?
I do. You basically, for me, the biggest value that he brings to the table is that he was actually brought up through a minor league system. How many other players actually get to come up through a minor league system before they go over to the KBO? Most of the players that are over there have never played in the MLB. They don't know how it necessarily works, so they don't have as easy a time adapting. They have to worry about the language barrier sometimes as well. So there's a lot of things that do come into play for players that come from Korea or from Cuba. That I think players, I should say fantasy owners, don't necessarily bring into the backs of their minds when they are actually trying to think about the player's value. But I don't think you have to worry about that with Ames this year. I think that he's going to be able to hit the ground running, and we'll just see how he translates.
That is an excellent point, my friend, and that's not a way that I had really looked at it. So, you know, I do appreciate that. That angle of looking at it. Now I'm going to put you on the spot, and I didn't cue you up for this. But why don't you take a guess? How many home runs do you think Eric Thames hits this year in Major League Baseball?
I'm going to say that I think he hits. Can I give a range, or do you want the exact number?
Oh, we're in La La Land here. Let's go for it.
Give I would say 19 this year.
Well, that's. I
was going to say between 16 and 19, basically, but I'll give him 19 just because if he play it, that's if he gets a full season worth of at bats. If he doesn't break 300, I couldn't give him more than 6.
All right. Well, and I think his draft value definitely is has factors in it, exactly what you're saying. I mean, the Brewers now, they have Travis Shaw, who looked good for a while last year, starting out with the Red Sox. So he's going to be vying for some playing time over at first as well. From what I've heard, and I haven't seen, of course, because I don't see KBO games, is that his defense is going to be fine over at first. So there could be a deal where, depending on the hot hand or what have you, that maybe he has to get some time in the outfield, depending on how the injuries fall. So I understand exactly you where you would say that. I think I'm a little more optimistic than you are, and I'm using some Miller Park factors. Power players seem to do pretty well at Miller Park. So I'm going to go more. I would have a tendency to put it at 23 home runs, 23 or 24, and I wouldn't be stunned if it was somewhere between 23 and 28 home runs. So that would definitely be a draft value for where he is. I think Travis Shaw is a guy that he doesn't come with quite the pedigree. It was really a surprise when he beat Pablo Sandoval out last year, and his batting average really took a dip last year in the second half. So there's going to be a lot of factors at play. I think Thames is a guy that if he comes out and starts raking in the spring, that you could see his draft value really skyrocket. I think that for sure. Well, my under-the-radar guy that I want to talk about is someone that Ben has mentioned because he's got center field prospects sort of breathing down his back. But that is one Keon Broxton, who is definitely an interesting character in and of himself. He had 9 home runs and 23 stolen bases last year in only 207 at-bats. He was hitting below 150 when they sent him to the minors in the start of the year last year. And he was getting regular playing time and struggling bad. He made an adjustment with his hands and how he holds the bat. And he came back in the second half looking like a completely different player. Before, unfortunately, he had an injury. I believe he broke his hand late in the season. And that cost him, a lot of time at the end of the season. And development time is important in this case, obviously. He had a .294 batting average and a .399 on-base percentage with 8 home runs and 16 stolen bases after the All-Star break. And from what I gather and from results in our mock, he's going late enough that I think this is a shoot-the-moon kind of endgame play that is a rarity. And if he gets you, even 15-plus stolen bases where he's going, I think his damage to your roster is minimal. Do you agree on this rosy outlook that I'm giving you for Keon Broxton?
Yeah, if I was picking a deep league sleeper, I would have picked Keon Broxton as well. So you've hit it right on the head. Basically, he's got he has a lot of talent, and when he made that adjustment last year, it seemed to do wonders for him, as you do see a little mechanical changes make hitters better, and they just kind of – the ball jumps off their bat and everything just kind of clicks for them, or with a pitcher, not tipping their pitches. But you saw a lot of progress with Keon Broxton after he made his hands adjustment. So I do think that he's going to be able to keep doing good this year. I think that if Brinson does come up, then they're still going to try to find a way to get Keon Broxton into that lineup, whether it's right field or, if there is an injury to Braun or if they give him a day off. I do think that they're going to be looking to try to get him into the lineup if he's producing this year. So,
yeah, I think he's going to be given a leash, and the leash that he's given is because of protecting service time for the Brinsons and the Phillips of their farm system. So he's going to be given a long leash. The Brewers played Ramon Flores a lot last year, who might be the worst player in the history of Major League Baseball, and a lot of that was definitely due to saving service time, etc. And it's sort of a long-term plan that's in place here. The Brewers are probably at least 2 years away from contention. And so, I think Keon Broxton gets a long leash. And he's one of those guys, if he gets enough playing time, where you can put a 2 in front of his stolen base total, okay, 20 stolen bases out of a guy that you can get as your 6th outfielder, that you draft. I mean, that is not easy to find. And other guys like that are, Travis Jankowski or, Malik Smith. These guys that you can get those 20 stolen bases from, they don't have any power upside. They don't have any RBI upside. So to me, Keon Broxton is the kind of guy that I want to make my endgame plays on in a wide array of leagues because – you know, if he comes out and he's really hurting you, if you get him as your sixth outfielder, you drop him and pick someone else up, you know, and you can be patient with him, you know, as a guy on your reserve bench. And if you have to use him for a week in weekly leagues, if he steals you three or four bases, his value is going to be plenty. So maybe I might be a little overly ambitious with Keon Broxton, but I can tell you when he was in a groove last year, he had 3 months in a row where, you know, he had 286 and then he had 295, and then he hit well over 300 for a month. I mean, for a guy who, you know, is stealing 16 stolen bases in just, you know, less than half the season, that means there's conceivable, you know, 35 to 40 stolen base upside, and you've got the right manager who's literally got his foot on the gas all the time. So I'm very, very high on Keon Broxton as a sleeper going into this season. Is there another Brewer that you'd like to focus on here, my friend?
I don't have anyone else really to touch on. No, we basically touched on all of the players that can actually bring some value in right now. And even some of the deep league players and even some future players. I think we've basically touched on everyone. Maybe Craig Counsell comes out of the dugout for an at bat or two, but I don't really know much more than that.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I think we've more than fulfilled our promise to the listeners out there in covering the Milwaukee Brewers. There was probably a couple of people out there sort of rolling their eyes and thinking to themselves, holy cow, this is a lot of Brewer talk. You know, unfortunately, the amount of Brewer talk we've just done here in this 45 minutes or so is probably more talk than the Brewers got the entire season last year. But that's what the previews are about. To me, is I want to help a wide array of people. You know, now we've touched on everybody from Ryan Braun to Keon Broxton to, you know, I guess we didn't talk a lot about Arcia, who's an interesting guy as far as his minor league numbers look so much better than that they translated last year. So I think Arcia would be, in years past, Arcia would be a really interesting guy. But unfortunately, with the gluttony that we have of middle infielders, I think Arcia is only going to be really, really a late-game play because there's so many other shortstops and middle infield-eligible players that could do, you know, that don't look to have as much of a learning curve in front of them as Orlando Arcia does. But people should remember, as far as waiver wire is concerned, that Orlando Arcia was a top 10 prospect overall, you know, widely thought of as a top 10 prospect going into last year. You know, he's a young player, and he's somebody that you don't want to completely take off your radar either. So he would be the only other person I would say that, you know, I wanted to touch on a little bit more. Arcia is probably not going to be a power guy. It'll be interesting to see how his speed develops too, but he's excellent glove at short. That's going to keep him in the lineup, and it'll be interesting to see how he develops, if he's a guy who's going to be a major offensive cog or if he's more of a Echevarria type down in Miami. Ben, I want to thank you for your time. We did this on the first of the year, so I want to wish all the Friends with Fantasy Benefits fans and people that support us out there, I want to wish them all a happy new year. And I want to wish my new friend, Ben Brennus, a happy new year as well. Hopefully this is a year that will offer a lot of baseball goodness. I can't wait until the World Baseball Classic. I'm ready to see some real baseball. How's your outlook for this year looking, Ben?
Well, you know, I've got 10 teams right now. I'd like to cut that down. So, ooh. But I think fantasy baseball is something I look forward to all year round. You know, I can't get enough of it. You know, basketball, you kind of take time off. Football, you take time off. Baseball, you never really seem to take time off. You know, you maybe get like 45 days of baseball per year, and then everything else is still baseball. You know, you got the winter meetings and stuff, so you're interested in that. You got free agency. You got spring training. You know, spring training is like less than like 60 days away. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. So,
well, the other curious thing about the time that we're talking now is that, you know, the football season is running to a close here. And week 17 in the NFL is a mockery to me. And the way that the bowl system has been run in college football is also a mockery. 49 bowls is the number that I heard, you know, 5-7 teams playing in bowl games. And then the all-out farce that was the two playoff games yesterday, where neither game was close or really watchable. You know, the Ohio State getting hammered on game, and Washington not really being in the game either. So, you know, baseball, I think, has a very bright future. And I think over time, people are going to see more and more that baseball is America's game and passion, and it should just keep growing and growing. That would be my wish for the coming year, I suppose. So, well, this has been Chuck Anderson and Ben Brennis talking about the Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers. I said that like there's anyone else wants to be them at this point. But maybe a couple years from now, somebody will. So, and hopefully we added to your knowledge of the fantasy players for them. And you'll hear Ben and I on multiple team previews, and we'll be doing a lot of work together during the season. We thank you so much for your support. I hope 2017 is a great one for you all. Signing off for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Thanks for being with us.